From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the reality of ESP with physicist Russell Targ. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Yahoo is out to cut 2,000 staff members. That's 14% of their workforce. My oh my, the company based in California said the cuts were part of efforts to just make it smaller, nimbler, more profitable. The web portal has 700 million users, but has failed to keep up with rival Google in the search engine business. And while its popular webmail service has been overtaken by social media such as Facebook and Twitter, Yahoo expects its cost-cutting program will save them $375 million a year. Investment advisor Mish Shedlock here with us. I guess in terms of business, Mish, this is probably a smart move for Yahoo, isn't it?
Oh, it is. But, I mean, let's look back to May of 2008. Microsoft offered $45 billion to Yahoo. And I said, my God, Microsoft is nuts here to be offering this. And then when Yahoo turned it down, I said, my gosh, Yahoo's nuts to be turning this down. The market cap of Yahoo today, I'm just looking at it right now, $18 billion. So they turned down $45 billion because they thought they could do better. Well, there's only so much ad revenue that can go on, and they're all fighting for it here. Yahoo's fighting with Google. Google's clearly winning the battle. Meanwhile, look at Amazon. Analysts came out yesterday and put a $1 trillion market cap estimate on. George, this is insane. The whole market right now is levitating on one thing and one thing only. That is more bailouts, you know, from the Fed, cheaper interest rates, the Fed holding interest rates low, the ECB over in Europe doing the exact same thing. And the minutes came out yesterday. This is kind of interesting. The minutes of the meeting, everyone thought that Bernanke was poised to do another quantitative easing starting anytime soon. The minutes of the meeting said that 10 out of 12 Fed governors were against more stimulus. The market started falling immediately on that news. It continued today. You know, what does it say, George, when the entire market is entirely dependent on more money from government, on more stimulus from the Fed? That's the economy we're in here.
Good point, Mish. Thank you so much. Again, Yahoo cutting its workforce by 2,000 people. There is no evidence that metal-on-metal hip replacements increase the risk of cancer, according to a study. So if this has been done to you, a little sigh of relief. I say a little. The new analysis of nearly 41,000 patients found no link in the 7 years following surgery. But the researchers from the universities of Bristol and Exeter said long-term follow-up was needed. Intelligent people take less sick leave, according to a study showing a clear link between low intellectual ability and long-term work absence. Cognitive ability at a young age has a strong impact on whether sickness stops people from working several decades later, according to the researchers. The study involved more than 23,000 people whose behavior was measured in either 1946, 1958, or 1970. In the 1946 group, 47% of those who were on long-term sick leave had been in the bottom quarter of childhood ability. Some 41% of those on sick 1958 cohorts were the lowest of the ability. The authors of the journal BMJ stated that over 2.5 million people receive health-related benefits just in the United Kingdom, where the study was done, based on being sick. Dr. Lila Denmark, you don't know that name. She was the world's oldest practicing physician. She retired at the age of 103. She died in Athens, Greece. She was 114. The United States has announced charges against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the accused mastermind of the 9/11-2001 terrorist attacks, and four others accused of involvement in the plot. The five accused are charged with terrorism, hijacking, conspiracy, murder in violation of the law of war, attacking civilian objects, intentionally causing serious bodily injury, destruction of property in violation of the law of war. The governing authority has referred all charges to a joint trial. Douglas Hagman, who monitors websites and terrorist activities. Doug, my first question to you, what took them so long to charge these people?
Well, you know, they were charged initially under the Bush administration, and then, of course, Obama had withdrawn the charges and attempted to take this before a federal, put it in a federal venue, but now it's back into a military commission, where it should be. I mean, for the last 200 years, military commissions have been used to prosecute violations of war, you know, from General George Washington, trying a Major John Andre, to the Nuremberg trials and the Tokyo trials, and so on. So that was it was a political issue, but now we're seeing it's coming to fruition, and this military commission is going to act pretty much like a federal trial would. These accused receive basically the same rights as they would in a federal venue. So this is something that hey, justice delayed is justice denied. So finally, we're seeing some justice here for the alleged masterminds of 9/11.
And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, of course, went to Osama bin Laden for funding, did he not?
Yeah, there's a long history of that, and others, as a matter of fact, from the late 80s through the through 9/11, where there was contact with bin Laden and other Al Qaeda members, and even some unindicted members of Al Qaeda and related ideologies.
Douglas, while we have you, what are you hearing these days? Internet chat or anything like that?
Well, recently there was an image of New York City put on a couple of terrorist websites. However, that the authenticity of that has not been proven. It's been rather quiet, thankfully.
All right, very good. Douglas Hagman's website. You'll find it at our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. 615 dead dolphins along a 90-mile stretch of beaches in Peru. The leading suspect is acoustic testing offshore, they believe, by oil companies. Up next, how would you like to hear the 7 secrets of time travel? That's what we're going to do with Von Breschler on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm looking forward to this author. His Von Breschler, his book, 7 Secrets of Time Travel. He also writes on subjects of human consciousness, energy healing. Von has lectured and led workshops throughout the United States and the United Kingdom, served as a faculty member at the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies in Rhinebeck, New York, former newspaper editor as well. Welcome to Coast, Von Breschler. Von, welcome. How are you?
Fine, George. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. You know, you've touched on a subject, time, that has everybody mystified, you know, because it moves so fast and sometimes it moves so slow. What is time, Von, according to you and your studies?
Well, you know, George, this was a fun book to research, and it took me a while. I looked at philosophers and scientists of old and modern physicists. I looked at what religion had to say and mystics have to say. And time as we normally think of it, like some motion picture that has a beginning, a middle, and a glorious end, rolling forward in a linear fashion, just doesn't exist. I mean, it just doesn't exist. Really, all that we have is radiant light descending upon us, striking each of us in turn. And Einstein called this the light striking the now plane, or creating an instant. So what we do is we live instant to instant, more like snapshots, and less like motion pictures.
You know, you've looked at this at time, and you've looked at it as a perspective that people are really mystified by it. They don't understand time, and you found that the case all over the place, didn't you?
Yeah, it really is true, and it you know, kind of fascinated me for a number of years. I had a lot of experiences. Maybe we can get into that later. But
sure.
In researching this, I came up with the case of the gymnast as Julian Barber in The End of Time. He's a rather modern a physicist, and he says you look at a gymnast, and you're at a gymnastics meet, and the gymnast starts to do a tumble, and you see the the you snap these images up in your with your mind's eye, and our mind's eye is just like a camera, but we can't snap it fast enough. We don't have quite the motor camera skills of the fanciest Nikon to get it all, you know. So we tend to see like the gymnast starting, then we see the gymnast going up in the air and then coming down, and then a few more rolls, and then ta-da, at the end. So we put it all together in our head, and we play it forward like a motion picture. We think we've seen something, but have we? Barbara said, have we really seen change? Have we really seen motion? Are we just deluding ourselves into what we're thinking? Because we're linear thinkers. We like to think of things having a starting point, a middle point, and an end point. But maybe time doesn't work like that. Maybe it's just when light strikes you and creates an instant right now.
Bon, you call your book Seven Secrets of Time Travel.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Seven secrets.
Well, I found that there were seven secrets. Now, there might be more than seven secrets, but I found seven. And I made each one a chapter, and after each chapter, I had exercises so you could experience time as different mystics have known time. One is time, as we know it, is simply an illusion of this earth plane with physical limitations. I think we could all grasp that.
Yeah, I understand that.
But then there is personal power in the present moment. My third secret is that time equals energy equals opportunity equals karma. And my fourth is that timelessness is just beyond time as we know it. Five is that you can traverse time and merge timelines. And really, there's only one timeline, but we tend to think of lines. You can transcend time. Six is that you can heal and affect real change best outside time and space. And my seventh is the primal power of the seven rays defines our opportunities. So for me, it all comes down to when sunlight strikes you.
Now, these seven rays, tell me about that.
Well, each ray has different properties. Each ray is a color of light as determined by crossing through space and curving off of celestial objects and creating this prismatic or spectrum of color, mm-hmm. which we see as seven primary colors. Now, not everybody perhaps sees seven colors, but most people see primarily seven colors. And ever since the ancient Greeks, we've had this kind of model. We see we see yellow, orange, red, green, blue, purple, indigo, like that. And in each color of light, has different properties. Of primary interest for time is that each ray of a different color has a different vibrational level.
Do you see time travel as possible, Vaughn?
Absolutely. Absolutely possible. There are people who have done it, and they tend to be all over the world, you know, and we can find examples of this. And what I came down with was examples of people in the East and in the West that have done it for years. And I'm not saying that there aren't others who have done it, but most reliably, we look at in the Hindu tradition in India, we look at the Samadhi mystics who go into a deep, deep trance, an mm-hmm. active meditation trance, and their consciousness escapes the body, and they escape the limitations of this physical manifest world, which has a fixed time, fixed space. We also see the dream walkers of the Native American tradition. We see in many shamanic traditions, the shaman goes into a deep trance, goes forward or backward in time, brings back to his people visions, insights of what he's seen for the good of the people. These are reliable stories that have, you know, accumulated for hundreds and hundreds of years.
I guess you could also say that remote viewers are absolutely time travelers.
Absolutely, George. Absolutely. Remote viewers, definitely. Dreamers, absolutely.
People who are intuitive.
Yeah. I think that a lot of what we thought of as intuition or remote viewing or given different words to is really a way of saying slipping in and out of fixed time and space. So you're really slipping in and out of this state of being, this level of creation, this manifest world that we live in, this mundane, dense world.
You know, sometimes I think I travel back into time, Vaughn, where I look at events that occurred in my life, and I try to fix them in terms of what did I do right, what did I do wrong, and how do I move forward into the future that way. Is that a form of time travel too?
Oh, I think so, and I've used it that way. People who have formally done past life regression, or people who have had dreams or daydreams about past lives, people who have done soul retrieval, you know, all of these are examples of going backward in time, which is probably easier for most of us than going forward in time, only because we have no frame of reference for going forward in time. It's a bit hard to conceive of.
Some people who have this ability to reach this higher consciousness, can they teach other people to do this?
Yes, absolutely. The exercises that I've compiled are really just based on meditation exercises that anybody could do and other people have mastered. Some people are just so good at it, though, that they can just slip in and out of these states of consciousness, going into a state of higher consciousness where they are time shifting all the time. You know, many of us have probably been walking or sitting or something, and suddenly, where did the last 20 minutes go? You know, you honestly can't account for it. You were pretty sure that you didn't, you know, fall asleep or anything, but you've lost 20 minutes. And I think if we all search our memories, you know, I think we'll come up with stories very much like that. And I found out in researching this that a lot of people have had experiences like me where they'll be facing like an accident or something, a car crash or some great emergency. And what happens is, you know, you just tend to, your consciousness, higher consciousness just tends to evacuate the body, you know, and you look down and you're time traveling going to different places and coming back with answers and time you can't account for. These are all time shifts.
And tell me the story about you driving across Montana on an empty gas tank. How the heck did you do that?
I thank you. I never get tired of telling the story, but you know, it just seems almost too much to believe. I was working at the newspaper in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and I decided I was going to start a magazine in Seattle. So anyway, it was just about Christmas time, and I decided I was going to pull a trailer behind my Bronco through the Tetons and through Yellowstone, and I was doing fine, except I hadn't planned out my trip very well. It was a winter blizzard, and I hit Montana on the west side at, I don't know, 3 in the morning, mm-hmm. and I noticed that I didn't have any gas. It was on empty, and I thought, well, you know, I'll find something open, and I didn't. I just kept driving and driving and driving, and pretty soon it was light and
was the gauge broken?
No, the gauge wasn't broken because I just didn't have any gas when I get there. You know, I put in.
Well, how'd you keep moving?
I kept moving. I think through time shift. You know, I think I actually got across the state pretty fast. You know, because suddenly I was across the Montana.
Boy, did you get miles to the gallon or what?
Yeah. I just had to, you know, it was like an emergency situation. So it just seemed like I was suddenly across Montana suddenly it was light and the gas stations were open. And how did this
Well, you were just going from shift to shift to shift. You know, when we come back, we'll take some calls, Vaughn. And also you'll hear some incredible stories of how people went from point A to point B just like that in an instant. They have no idea how it happened. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, the reality of ESP, a physicist's proof of psychic ability. I'm looking forward to that. And welcome back. We're with Vaughn Brashler, Seven Secrets of Time Travel. Vaughn, how do you explain lost time that so many people experience?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've certainly experienced that. I used to sit in the darkroom at our newspaper, and I'd start to develop the film, and suddenly I'd realize that you know, the time had elapsed, and I didn't know how far it had elapsed, but the little ringer would go off and say that I had already exposed the film too long, and I had just gone somewhere else. I mean, I was somewhere else, you know, and lost time, you know, walking down the street, and you start down one end of the street, and you're very conscious of everything. It's a mm-hmm. sunny day, and you hear the cars, and you hear the sounds, and suddenly you're at the end of the street. You don't remember walking down the street at all. You know, it's like we're losing time all the time. Well, I think we're time shifting a lot more than we think.
Well, what's happening to that gap? I mean, are we going into another dimension?
Yeah, we're going into another dimension. Now, P.D. Uspensky wrote an interesting book called Tertium Origanum. It's really a classic, a cult classic book. And he was also the biographer of Gurdjieff. He was in the Gurdjieff movement, the Fourth Way. He said that we live our lives in this physical world, this manifest world, as creatures of limited perceptive skills, three-dimensional thinkers who live inside a restricted box. We can't see what's above us. We can't see the level above us in our box. There's people living on the top of our box, but we can't see them. And these are maybe fourth-dimensional beings. They can see beyond our box. We are so very limited by our perceptive skills, having very little skills of true awareness. And I think that's the problem. We are limited by our dimensions. You know, we really are just, at best, probably three-dimensional thinkers. I think we're two-dimensional thinkers.
Well, Vaughn, when we go through this lost time, let's say you're walking, that example that you just gave.
Yeah.
Do we disappear? If someone was watching us for this entire period,
no.
From point A to B, do they lose us?
The interesting thing about this is that physical form, matter, including our body, cannot transverse time, since you would need to go at the speed of light, the universal speed limit of the universe, a billion feet per second, and to approach or exceed the speed of light would turn matter into pure energy. The only thing we have that can travel at the speed of light and is pure energy is our higher consciousness, which we know can operate outside our body miraculously. So your body doesn't disappear. Your body's there. You know, your higher mind, if you will, is kind of going somewhere else.
Okay, let's take some calls here. We'll go to Jason in New Albany, Indiana, to get us started. First-time caller. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, George? I have the
good, Jason.
Back for you, man.
I'm telling you,
I love what you do.
Thank you, sir.
And what I was asking about is, like, would it be possible, maybe possibly perhaps time travel and maybe change, alter events in the past, like what 9/11 and all that. And maybe y'all could check out prothink.org and 9/11missinglinks.com and find out the real people behind 9/11.
You know,
what
that's just a great question,
of
and it involves so many ethical considerations. You know, I think that it's just not possible because, not possible because you're going to go in a consciousness state. You're not going to go in a physical body. Therefore, you won't have hands. You know, you can't write documents, squeeze that trigger, you know, push anybody off a cliff. You know, you can't stand up in a crowd and wave. You know, you lack all the physical attributes, but you do have great perceptive, great skills of awareness and great vision. So what you do is you go as a perfect witness, and you come back with insights. There is evidence of the contrary, that people could go forward or backward in time and have some influence. I know, certainly the Nazis were actually working on this, and there's some evidence that maybe this happened. You know, we have interesting considerations like, are aliens really time travelers from our future? You know, a lot of speculation in that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a possibility that people who seem to be channeling voices of the Mayans right now, this worry over 2012, are they really witnessing the voices of Mayan time travelers coming from the past into their future, our present?
Okay, next up, let's go to Sue in Chico, California. Hi, Sue.
Hi, good evening. I have a question.
Sure.
I was wondering, could I learn to time travel as a blind person? And if so, how? I'd like to start.
Absolutely. you don't need physical attributes like the ability to physically see. I'll tell you what the Samadhi mystics do to train their people into time traveling, experiencing shifts outside normal time and space. They teach them to have controlled dreaming. And if, you know, I would be curious, Sue, to know if when you dream, you see something, and not maybe visually, but you perceive something. Because we're talking about something besides the five perceptive skills, the five senses. We're talking about a level of awareness.
Yes.
Now, there are people, there's been a couple of books by a fellow called Bruce Vance. He's kind of a Montana poet, Mindscape, Dreamscape, where he describes in beautiful poetic terms what people experience with this level of awareness in learning dreams, let's say, dreams of where you actually encounter things. You go backward and forward seemingly in time, and you see things that are just exotic, and mm-hmm. and you have different memories of what you bring back, and this is the reason to keep a dream journal, by the way, is that you'll not smell, and you'll like, as he said, something like you'll smell blue, and you'll hear green. You know, all the perceptive senses we have are turned around in the state, because you're going to go with a higher level of perception, which we commonly call awareness.
You talk about exercises, things that people can do. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, the exercises are pretty simple. They are derived from basically Samadhi mysticism and somewhat the Native American tradition. They are done in a quiet, possibly remote, and safe environment. You could do them in your home, for instance. I wouldn't try them at a bus stop or on a train. You know, you need to put the body, the physical body, in reclining position where it feels safe enough to allow your spirit to roam, let's say, to be free. The exercises are in a deep level of meditation, an active level of meditation, and they involve giving preset thoughts, directives that you carry forward with you, and a lot of imagery and a lot of visualization to set it up. It's pretty simple. I've actually tested this out with different groups. And, when I did the Omega Institute, it was really interesting because I had like a Hollywood production assistant. I had a dentist. I had an economics teacher. I had a realtor. I had an interesting group, and they all got it. They all got it so well that, I mean, it was almost like a group of Samadhi mystics by the end of the week. You know, I would have to go and, like, shake them to get them out of, you know, this deep meditative state. I mean, they were gone.
It sounds like it could be fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It is fun. I mean, you could find lost keys or most anything.
Let's go next to Bob in Kansas City on the Kansas side. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Great to be on. Hello to Vaughn. I was listening to your show, and I had a unique perspective that I learned about time when I was a kid in religion class that I thought maybe, you know, your guest and maybe some of your listeners might be interested in hearing.
Sure.
And that
is
that time is an invisible element. Is the invisible element that separates us from the invisible eternity. You have time and you have eternity. And time is an invisible element. That's why they invented the clock, was because you cannot see time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an invisible element, and it separates us from eternity. And when you talk about time travel and this meditative state and stuff like that, I mean, it's possible for, you know, people to have out-of-body experiences, but, you know, you want to be careful with that, because sometimes you may not be able to get back into your body. You know, you talk about, you know, like spirits,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're in eternity, and they can direct thoughts. Thoughts can travel like radio waves.
Yep.
And that's how they direct thoughts. And they're in eternity, and they know what the future is, because they are already in eternity. And you have, you know, soothsayers, and that's how they can foretell, you know, the future events and stuff like that, because they are already in eternity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. You know, absolutely. There was a 17th century German mathematician named Leibniz. Yeah, he's quite famous for his views on time, and he was also a religious philosopher of the time, and he said there really are two levels of creation. Now we'd call it something like the unmanifest world and the manifest world, or, you know, the world of spirit above, the divine spirit. Well, he said that there was God's world above, a world of divine spirit. And there was the physical world below that, the manifest world of creation. And the manifest world of creation, he said, was a world of illusion and confusion. And consequently, we come up with words like sooner or later, you know, because we have no idea what time really is. It is invisible. Yeah.
How did you get involved in studying time travel?
I almost had a car accident. I almost took a car off a cliff.
Really?
And I had like 2 seconds to figure out what to do. And those 2 seconds seemed to last forever. You know, people can probably relate, you know, where your whole life flashes in front of you, and, you know, and very few clicks go off the clock in all of this, but you just live an eternity. So I had like probably less than 2 seconds to figure out whether I was going off the cliff or going to just hit the embankment and crash. And I had so much time. I obviously went through a time shift, and I just stretched out time, because it just seemed like the longest time transpired between when I first saw that I was going to go over the cliff or hit the embankment, and when I figured out what to do. But I actually was able to go through different scenarios and actually analyze them and then reject them and move on to yet more considerations, which should have taken me like a long time and seemed to take a long time. That was the first thing that actually got me. Then I witnessed a few things like that and had a few more strange encounters, and then it always seemed to me, too, like everyone else, that we all perceive time differently. And indeed we do. You know, it depends on when electromagnetic radiation of a dynamic quality strikes you.
it actualizes you, it initializes you, it makes our life work, you know, provides this energy to get up and go. But we all experience it differently. Some of us seem to feel time is going slowly at the same time that other people feel that time is going quickly. It all depends on our reference frame, our frame of reference.
Sure does. Let's go to Frank in Hawaii. There you go, Frank. Thanks for calling, Frank.
Aloha.
Hi, Frank.
I very much appreciate your show, George. I have two questions. One of them is, you know, with all the talk about the Mayan calendar and being the end of the world and such, I kind of have a theory about that. And I, you know, just out of common sense, I don't think that it's the end of the world, of course. But I do think that being that the Mayan calendar, from what I understand, the Mayan calendar is the most accurate calendar known to man. And my theory is, I think that, my question is it possible that time changes on December 21st of 2012? Is it possible that something in the cosmos shifts so that we can no longer measure time as we have, and therefore the Mayan calendar will not be as accurate as it has because of this time shift? And then my other question is about deja vu. What do you think about deja vu, and how come I don't have those anymore? I used to have them when I was younger. But I don't have those things anymore. And when you're traveling down the highway and you all of a sudden you realize you're 20 miles past where you were before, you know, that stuff doesn't happen to me anymore. So I'll take my answers off air, I guess, huh?
Okay, very good. Want to touch on just a few of those in the moments we have left?
Well, sure. You know, deja vu, I think we've all had some moments where things seem remarkably familiar, you know, events or places or people, you know, and there's a lot of research out there on reincarnation and people who seem to remember past lives and little bits and snippets come to them. And some of them have been very well checked out and proved to be fairly accurate. However, they got the information, you know, it would seem that they actually do have past life recall. So there's that. But, you know, but I think that we do, you know, shift in and out of time. You know, time is a loop. It's really not a straight line here in the middle and then the end. You know, time is a loop. It's an endless timeline that goes and loops back on itself. So we could be shifting all the time, going forward and backward in time. Consider that, you know, you're already living in the future and you're still living in the past in some sense, you know, that has to be true, you know. So I think deja vu, I mean, I totally believe in deja vu. I totally believe in people having the ability to do prophecy because they are, you know, actually shifting into the future time-wise.
So we're not going to need the H.G. Wells time machine, are we?
No, it wouldn't work. Yeah, it's a beautiful machine. I'd love to have it, you know.
I want one, too.
But I think the machine, you know, would turn into pure energy and anybody in it if you approached the speed of light. But
what year would you set it to, Vaughn, if you had one?
Oh, golly, they're all going to be good. Now, his question about the Mayan calendar is fascinating because he's asking if there's going to be some kind of a change around winter solstice of this year. You know, one of the...
Well, the best way to do that, Vaughn, is to time travel and find out. We're out of time. 7 Secrets of Time Travel. Up next, Russell Targ joins us as we talk about the reality of ESP. Vaughn, thank you for being on the show again. Appreciate it.